Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly.
So that was fun.
I'm so sorry.
You forgot to unmute the mics. You're starting over.
This is so funny. I guess my car wreck affected me.
There you go. Yes, you were saying you have a car wreck.
Yes.
So whiplash, it whiplashed your brain too.
I'm not kidding. Amnesia is part of it. No, oh, it's so crazy.
Poor thing. So it's okay. Startling. You were saying that also that you're grateful that it wasn't worse.
Yes. Kids weren't in the car, and it was like, it was just weird because I was on the way to her funeral, which is like even weirder. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Unfortunately, one of my friend's husband's passed away of a sudden heart attack.
No.
Yeah.
Young.
He's like 50. He was like 55, still young. I mean, yeah.
Hello.
I know. right.
Quite young.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
sad.
I'm
very
so sorry
sad
for your loss.
Yeah. So thank you. So yeah, but the good news is, on a brighter note, I had my 4-year-old preschool prom. How funny is that?
You sent pictures on Facebook. Adorable.
He had the best time.
He did.
You know his food addiction. He literally the whole day was like, what are they going to have for food? What's it going to be? Are they going to have candy? Are they going to have cake? Are they going to have chocolate? I mean, six in the morning until we arrived at the freaking thing at 5. But he loved it. I mean, he literally, like, he's either going to be a chef or a compulsive overeater, one or the other. So
or both.
Exactly.
Now, what is a 4-year-old prom?
Preschool prom. Okay.
Really, come on.
So basically, it's adorable. They all get dressed up in little tuxedos and, you know, pretty dresses for the little girls. And the parents come, and it's basically just like a little party. They play music. They've got food. The kids run around. And
do they... do the little boys and girls dance together?
Yeah. I mean, they're just, it's more of like, you know, tag basically but it's so cute. I mean, to see the little kids in like the little dress up outfits is so adorable. So it was really cute. And then, yeah, we had gone to a carnival that day. So I had my face painted Frozen because I need something girly with two boys. Like I was like craving estrogen. So I'm like, give me the most girly face paint you can do. And she was like, okay. And then London was a tiger. So we had a fun time.
So cute. So cute.
How about you?
Well, I had the joy of my daughter and her boyfriend visiting, but just in and out this weekend.
Because
they were actually going to an herbal festival type of thing where Michael was actually speaking about herbs. And
oh, cool.
In the perspective of Ayurveda. Uh-huh. Excuse me. So they were actually supposed to come in on Thursday night and then go down to Laguna on Friday. They didn't get in until Friday night, like at 9 o'clock, because Michael was having some neck issues. And then the drive just took longer because Tiffany and he weren't communicating well. So they took a wrong turn.
Oh,
so they ended
no.
up in LA and then had to backtrack. It's a long drive from Grass Valley to Thousand Oaks anyway.
Yeah.
So anyway, they are exhausted. They were just leaving today right before the show. They got to the festival. They came back and then got to spend a little time with them yesterday evening and Sunday night. But short trip.
Yeah.
But it was fun. It's always
good.
Cool. Got to visit my stepmom in the hospital. She's still not doing so well. So let's say another prayer for Dora. Come on, Dora. We love you.
Mm.
Yeah.
Aww.
But otherwise, things are good. I have no complaints.
Good.
Yeah. Okay.
So let's talk.
Let's get on with it.
All right. I can't stop thinking about our guest last week. We had Lillian Pearl Bridges. She's the author of Face Reading in Chinese Medicine. I thought it was so fascinating. I like literally am hoping that I can erase all my pain lines, as she was saying. So for those of you who missed the show, it's really interesting. She is a Chinese face reader, which means that she basically can look at people and based on their facial characteristics, describe them. And she gave us a little reading before the show and was right on. Keep thinking about what she said about you and how you were so sweet and generous. And I'm like, yes. I mean, it was just, I can't stop it because it's like, that is exactly how I would describe you. Like, that would be the first thing I would say. And that's the first thing she
said.
But
this will be my new manipulation. Somebody gets mad at me. I'll say, no,
but I'm
sweet.
But you are. So you're not even manipulating. So she was wonderful and really great at her job and just a really great persona.
Cool lady.
Yes.
All right. So this week, very exciting, we have an in-studio guest, which is always fun, Christian Arrieta. He's a 21st century attorney and counselor at law. Christian focuses his law practice on trusts and estates, business and property law. Christian helps clients with challenging legal transactions as well as litigation. He also serves as general outside legal counsel to a number of privately held companies. His expertise includes comprehensive estate planning, asset protection, probate and trust administration, will contests, I think. Thank you.
Contests.
And trust litigation, property disputes, and elder law. Christian is a volunteer with Women's Economic Ventures, as well as Senior Concerns in Thousand Oaks. Oh, you may know somebody I'll have to ask you about later. He is a cum laude graduate of California Western School of Law, and he earned his bachelor's degree in philosophy cum law at California State University of Northridge. I went to Northridge, too, after UC Santa Barbara. Okay, welcome, Christian.
Matador.
Yes. Welcome.
Hi, Christian Arrieta here. Yes. Thank you. I'm closer to the mic.
Yay. So glad you made it in studio with us. I have so many questions because actually in my age of life, in my mid-50s, I have a lot of people around me, myself included, who are starting to lose their parents or one or the other. And this whole concept of how people deal with inheritance is a hot topic on my mind. So you don't have any, you have not lost any parents.
No, I haven't. But I was just telling him we did our will and trust and we did this whole thing. And it's just like that itself is pretty stressful. Yeah. And he was saying I was like in the small population that does it. And I understand why. It's like a lot to think about. And yeah, stressful.
So
yeah.
So tell us a little bit about how you got interested in that aspect of law.
You know, that's an interesting story because I was telling Kelly earlier, I was in Lima, Peru, where my cousin had inherited some property. It was a substantial amount of property that was purchased and developed by his father, who died in the 70s. And after 20 years or so, the government and private persons had squatted on this property, and he had to go down and just untangle a giant mess.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And he called me after he had got some money, and I was living in Miami at the time. And he asked me if I would be interested in owning and operating a bar with him. And so I was, that was during my first stint in college, and I said, okay.
Wow.
So I was there for about a year and a half and got to see how he dealt with that. And I guess, and then, you know, fast forward to the nutshell, when I decided to become a lawyer as opposed to becoming a professional academic through philosophy, I didn't want to be one of those sort of typical twice divorced alcoholic attorneys that nobody seems to like very much. And I kind of gravitated to trusts and estates through some acquaintances and through interest, you know, during law school.
Oh, wow. Okay. So now about your parents, are they still alive?
My parents are still alive. I haven't lost any of them yet, thank the Lord. Though, you know, sometimes, to be frank, my dad might get lost at the mall or something if we're, you know, out and about, because he does suffer a little bit from the early stages of dementia. Mm-hmm. And that, too, is something that people in our age group are dealing with, is they're calling us the... and especially the 50-somethings and 60-somethings, the sandwich generation. I don't know if you've heard of this.
Yes. Say more. Yeah.
Well, you know, you're taking care of your children who sometimes boomerang back home. And right. Meanwhile, you mm-hmm. find yourself taking care of an ailing parent, or oftentimes parents with dementia. Mm-hmm. And it can just be, it can really impact our lives. Mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, part of what I deal with sometimes is avoiding, but sometimes helping people go through the process of conservatorship.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. God, there's so much to think about that you don't think about, I guess.
I know. And anybody who's listening who wants to call in, Christian's very receptive to phone calls and questions you may have. So you can call us at 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815. So I lost my mom many years ago. She was very young. She was just a couple years older than I am now, and that was sudden. And but my parents had already established their living will and trust at that time. And when my father passed about 5 years ago, I have to give him total kudos because he really did a good job taking care of, you know, what would go to my stepmom, what's going to go to my sister and me, and how we'd arrange this, because we got properties and different things. And it was... complicated, but he did a really good job. And I am now hearing some horror stories from some of my friends about where their parents did a terrible job setting these things up, and they are really screwed. So there's absolutely screwed. Like now, I have one situation where there's a group of siblings, and the you know, dad had a terrible job, mom's already gone, and you know, there's a lot of collectibles and valuable things that are in part of the estate. And then there seems to be one of the siblings who kind of has mental illness and has been one who was more taken care of by the parents kind of financially. But none of that is stated in the estate, the, you know, the trust about how to divvy things up. What does he get? What does he not get? What does she get? What does she not get? It's a mess. Oh. Do you have any advice on situations like that? Should individuals get their own attorneys to deal with this?
Yeah, you know, sometimes I like to say that I deal in janitorial services, you know, when it comes to people's estates.
Yes.
You know, the broad topic is putting your affairs in order. Mm-hmm. And, you know, part of that has to do with creating the right documentation and being deliberate about it and having good advice. Some people ask, well, you know, what about do-it-yourself? And I say, you know, I welcome you to give it a shot. I've been practicing primarily in trusts and estates for 12 years now, and I went to law school, and I'm still learning every day. So, you know, it's a process that sometimes comes by way of experience more than anything else.
But at the very least, if somebody doesn't have financial resources or they don't know, what's like one simple thing that someone could do to at least prevent disaster? Would that be drawing up a will or like just naming their items, their properties, who that wants to go to? What would that look like?
Well, you know, I, the very least, if you want to kind of tiptoe into things, is I would actually think about whom you want to place in charge when something happens. And it's either going to be, unfortunately, a crisis of some sort, or an illness, or temporary or permanent disability, or death. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, one first step forward might be who should have power of attorney in order to untangle things if I'm incapacitated, and who should have the ability to make medical decisions for me, including, you know, whether or not to take me off of artificial life support if the doctors have come back with a report that it's over with. And so that is a good first step to organizing and putting your affairs in order. If you don't do that, people end up going through some sort of crisis or grief, you know, and meanwhile having to untangle title issues, you know, obstacles at the bank, red tape. Doctors won't talk to you. Doctors can't talk to you. You guys know this, that you can't share medical information.
Right.
And it can just be a nightmare for your loved ones.
Do you remember that story while you were talking? I was thinking about that woman. I think she was in Florida, and she was on life support. Her parents wanted to keep her on. Mm-hmm. Her spouse didn't, and I think she didn't have anything drawn up. Mm. So it's like, in those type of situations, what happens?
Yeah, well, in her case, she was married. Her name was Terry Schiavo.
Oh, you remember, yeah.
And unfortunately, it went all the way down to, you know, the House of Representatives and some grandstanding that, you know, on public television. Because it was a, you know, right to die, right to life, you know, who should be left in, who should make these decisions. And her husband, she was left in a vegetative state for many years, and she was on a feeding tube. And her husband had moved on and wanted to get remarried. Oh. And you can't get remarried while you're still married. And he wanted to end the life support, but she hadn't put any sort of authority in place or made what we call a health care directive. And so there was a fight between her parents and her surviving spouse about what should be done. And she was left in the middle, you know, unbeknownst to her. And so that could have been easily rectified by, you know, simple documentation that people can download. For example, here in California, you can go to the California Medical Association and get a freebie off their website.
A healthcare directive.
Maybe
it's
a feedback. Yeah, and just, you know, put put someone in charge down. Right.
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah. So what ended up happening? What I can't remember.
You know, she's died since. But I don't recall exactly how it shook out once it came down to it. I think the spouse had the priority there to make the final decision. To the disappointment of the parents, mm-hmm. who, for probably religious reasons, didn't believe that mm-hmm. it should, that course of action should be taken. But we, meanwhile, had to be dragged out in front of the entire country because different political mm-hmm. ideologies were in play.
Unbelievable.
What any suggestions for? There's a couple of situations that I've encountered with people that I know where somebody was living in the parent's house, and then upon death of, let's say, the second parent, that it's never stated how long they can live in the house or whether they can sell the house, and if that person doesn't want to move and feels entitled, mm-hmm. what could the other siblings do?
Right. Yeah. So that's. That's the scenario. The reality is, I always tell people, the easiest way to divide up an inheritance, which is usually something like a house, is you sell it and you divide up the cash, mm-hmm. Because you can't really dice up property mm-hmm. among siblings.
You get the bathroom. You get the
right.
You get the attic. Yeah.
Draw lines down the middle. And so again, put it, if what the trust or the person's will says is, it goes evenly to my children, somebody should be put in charge to carry that out and administer that and honor the parents' intentions.
But would that actually mean kicking out the person who's basically squatting in the house?
Unfortunately, that is an often reality in cases that I deal with, is we have to go through an eviction proceeding. And we have to, they'll take it all the way down to the wire and wait for the sheriffs to come and escort them out of the house.
Wow.
And then, there might be an instance mm-hmm. where they're homeless. We have creative ways to help navigate that scenario and try to, without intruding on people too much, because mm-hmm. that can be. Here's another angle to it is oftentimes what really began as an enablement situation, parents enabling one or more of their children, morphs into this situation where it was really no particular fault of the children. It's kind of how they were raised in their household.
And their entitlement now, right?
Right.
Yeah, and this is what I get.
Later in the parents' life, that can turn into elder abuse, and mm. they can be, the subject of a criminal investigation or, by Adult Protective Services and the like.
Wow.
So it's a needle that's tough to thread.
I want to talk a little bit about the psychology of all of this, about how, I know we were talking a little bit before the show about the psychology of the family dynamics, that when you're dividing stuff that's inherited, it's like you're kind of like, you regress back into those five-year-olds fighting, It's mm-hmm. like the family dynamics is, and so you see that quite a bit. Huh?
I do.
Yeah.
I do. Oftentimes I see what I like to call the prime gender complex. This is where, the eldest child feels that, sort of hearkening back to the feudal days, that they're going to lord over the estate.
Yeah.
And they're going to determine when their siblings get what, uh-huh. That can create fights. Oftentimes parents, say you have two children, two sisters, for example, and the parents don't want to slight anybody, so they say, well, we'll just leave them both in charge mm-hmm. and let them navigate this together.
Yeah.
Well, when you have two and there's no tiebreaker, and then the question is, how likely is it for sisters following the death of their parents to get into a little bit of a tiff?
Mm-hmm.
And, kind of likely, and you have to have, I think, a mechanism to navigate a tiebreaker if that should happen. So that's mm-hmm. another way. But, then the personalities get involved. And this, mm-hmm. I was mentioning to Kelly earlier that sometimes this is like the equivalent of a divorce amongst siblings.
Oh, yeah.
And for me, it's the saddest thing,
Yeah.
And because I love my siblings and I got a bunch of them, and I hope that we would never go through this. But unfortunately, sometimes a switch gets flipped in one's brain when you lose your parents and you're going through your own stages of grief. You know, maturity.
Yeah.
And so right. In that case, you know, unlike divorcing spouses who maybe they've been together for 5 or 10 years or even more, and it's come time to divorce and separate their assets, we're talking about people who've known each other since they were babies.
Right.
And
right.
they can harbor a lot of, you know, grief.
Right. And not to mention people end up in different financial positions in their life. So if there is a sizable inheritance of some sort, some will feel more,
yes.
you know, you got more than I did growing up. So therefore
yes.
I should get more now. And wow. I think that parents really need to factor in all of those considerations when they're dealing with these things. Do you think that most lawyers are very savvy to the actual psychological dynamics of families in your position, or do they give that kind of advice to their clients?
Well, I do. I think.
Well, we know you do, or you wouldn't be on our show.
Exactly.
Well, you know, sometimes the general practitioner who is sort of the family go-to will take a stab at helping their clients with every aspect of their mm-hmm. life, you know, and I guess that'd be the equivalent of your GP trying to get deep into, you know, your mental health, you know,
mm-hmm.
and that's, you know, I on the other hand have a bit more experience with it. I've seen how many ways it can fall off the rails, and so that informs me in the planning process and helps me educate my clients as to what may or may not be a wise decision.
You should write a pamphlet or something for people that you could post online that educates people about what kinds of questions they should be asking when they're getting their estate
oh, that's a good idea.
Settled.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like all the concerns, like make sure you pay attention to the personalities of the siblings, who's
yeah.
going to be in charge of the directives, all those things. You know, mm-hmm. I know some of it's just kind of boilerplate, but I bet you've seen and heard so many unusual situations that you know the questions that people should be asking.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Every once in a while, I've done a lot of blogging on the topic, but
okay.
that all kind of lives in cyberspace. And every once in a while, I think about sort of assembling one of those, you know, for idiots book or whatever.
Yeah.
Yes.
That would be
absolutely.
Great.
Absolutely. I think most people do not know anything about this.
No.
I mean, I really don't. I think
But you also have the whole factor of people that, you know, people don't want to deal with this. It's
yeah.
like, you don't want to talk to your parents about, okay, have you set up everything for when you go?
Yes.
What do you mean when I go? Well, you know, Dad, you are going to die.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, oh, I don't want to talk about that.
Yes.
You know, yes, I've done enough. But,
yes.
but a lot of times parents won't even show their children their wills or their trusts
mm-hmm.
until it's
the end.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, I mean, because
right.
they don't have to give you a copy. Or what is that law,
I
actually?
Think,
who
well,
has
there's
to get
no
a copy?
Law. It's you know, family, you know, the I think traditionally that's considered private. And people, you know, you've seen it on TV where there's a reading of the will. You know, the person's been dead
yes.
and buried. And,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
But in reality, it doesn't really work like that. It's, you know, you've lost your parent. Now, you know, you start shuffling through their papers and trying to figure out what the heck mm-hmm. is going on. And then hopefully you find a will or a living trust and you take it from there. I agree with you entirely. It's much better for the parents to have the family meeting much ahead of that
mm-hmm.
and make sure that everybody's on the same page, you know, and have at least a roadmap.
Exactly.
But if somebody is put, okay, so maybe you can share a little bit about what is the executor of a trust, mm-hmm. and the executor doesn't necessarily mean the executor is the one who's inheriting everything. The executor is the one who implements the statements in the trust. Is
right.
that accurate?
Uh-huh. That's pretty much it. The, you know, classically, you leave a will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially for us regular folks, you know, who aren't part of the 1%, you know, up until, you know, in the last 30 or 40 years, everybody left a good old-fashioned will.
Mm-hmm.
And the will says, I bequeath my estate to X, Y, and Z, you know, my children,
mm-hmm.
my loved
mm-hmm.
ones, you know.
Yeah.
And I think it even uses words like that, you know, as mm-hmm. Of sound mind, et cetera. You know, there's sort of standard fare. And I appoint, you know, my wife or, you know, my brother, et cetera, as my executor. And the executor executes. The executor's like mm-hmm. has to take that will, go to court, get the will, first of all, validated as indeed the last will
mm-hmm.
and accepted into probate, and then appointed by the court to now undertake the business,
oh.
you know,
mm-hmm.
selling property, inventory, gather assets, you know, account to everybody, and ultimately do a distribution. So fast forward to, you know, the last, you know, like I said, maybe going back to the 60s and 70s and onward, people like us started using what the richer folks tended to use, which is a family trust. Mm-hmm. And so the difference there is, instead of leaving behind a document that people are supposed to find after I've died, mm-hmm. dust it off and go get it validated with the court, what you're doing is you're changing title to your assets now and putting them in a trust. And so now, instead of, you know, husband and wife as joint tenants on title to the property, it's going to be husband and wife as trustees of mm-hmm. you know, the Smith Family Trust. Mm-hmm. And by changing the title and appointing thyself as trustee, you know, basically that just sort of rides along in the DNA of your property from there until it comes time to be used. And you know, the at that point, you know, slightly different than executor, it's a trustee of a trust. And I like to give the example of, you know, with a trust, if I take off my watch and give it to you now and say, I'm giving this to you, so and when I die, I want you to give it to my son, I've created a trust. And mm-hmm. so the trust mm-hmm. means I'm entrusting you with my property. Mm-hmm. You're going to have entitlement to possess it, but it's ultimately not going to be yours. It'll be for the benefit of somebody else. Mm-hmm. And so that in kind of simple terms, is what we're doing. But us attorneys find a way to put a whole lot of extra jargon into it.
So what do you do if you're in a room, you're talking about all this, and the siblings are completely fighting? Like, do you almost have to be like a mediator too? Like, kind of, yeah.
Often, you know, and I have to be careful there about a conflict of interest, because usually I represent one of those people.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
So I get the call from the sibling who's been slighted and mm-hmm. saying, you know, I'm not getting my inheritance. What do I do next? And mm-hmm. so I will advance that person's interests. Or on the other hand, I may be representing the trustee of the trust, in which case, you know, I have to be careful about, you know, not violating that sort of conflict of interest, where, you know, everyone's got to be dealt with impartially. Mm-hmm. But mediation
yeah.
is an excellent way forward for a family. And I always wish people would go there first.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, unfortunately, what they tend to do is go through at least a couple stages of the legal battle before they kind of get worn down and
right.
and sort of, you know, ushered into a mediation.
Uh-huh.
Oftentimes the judge kind of kicks them into mediation and makes them do it. And that proves helpful. You know.
So interesting. I know a therapist friend who just took a mediation course.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mm-hmm. mean, because it is sort of like a therapist in a way, but not getting so in depth into the feelings, but just how to resolve the conflict, the mm-hmm. crisis, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. That could be very expensive for people, I would think, these fights over
yeah.
trusts and who gets what.
Yeah, and often it's oftentimes at the expense of their inheritance, mm-hmm. you know. So, you know, I feel more sorry for the sort of innocent bystanders who are just waiting for theirs while two of their siblings fight it out, you know. Mm-hmm. And they have to see their inheritance sort of, you know, diminishing, you know, during the course of it.
Does the executor of a will, if other siblings are named as recipients of something, have to give copies of that to the other siblings, or no?
Like,
how would you know that the person who is supposed to be giving you stuff is really giving you what you're supposed to get?
Right. Yeah. There's a whole set of laws about who's entitled to notice,
mm-hmm.
and mm-hmm. it's a legal duty that the trustee or the executor is carrying out, and so all of the children, you know, mm-hmm. of the deceased obviously are entitled to notice,
mm-hmm.
Even if they're not featured.
Right. If they're not featured.
Yeah, because that's how people find out that they've been disinherited. Is
right.
They're finally given a copy of the will or the trust, and to their shock, you know, mm-hmm. or perhaps, you know, maybe it's not surprising, but they find that their name comes up where it says this person is specifically disinherited or something,
or gets $1.
Right.
Oh.
And so you can imagine that that's when, you know, sometimes they want to contest that. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're talking about with a will contest or a trust contest, is they have the right to be heard by a court and say, well, I think that that was the product of undue influence, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, my sister who was living with dad and, you know, kind of had his you know, had the access and the opportunity to overly influence him in the situation, you know, maybe there's like a codependent mm-hmm. relationship, you know, kind of pushed it over, and really that's not dad's will, that's her will. Mm-hmm. So that's what undue influence is about. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, sometimes instruments get drawn up and executed, and poor old widow really had already lost her marbles a few years before that, and so that's mm-hmm. where we say, well, she didn't have the capacity, sure. the legal capacity to make a will. Mm-hmm. And so there's all kinds of ways that it can become the subject of a contest.
Oh, and I think that happens a lot, actually, right?
And my question is, do they usually win or not? Because I would think that they wouldn't win those cases. Like,
well, you know, they say that there is the winners are the attorneys.
Right.
But same in divorce.
Yeah.
Yeah, same as a divorce. You know, it's of course, they earn their keep. And but, you know, I wouldn't wish probate litigation on my enemies. Mm-hmm. It's just not only a sore subject and traumatizing, but it's costly. There's a public record of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, and irreparably damaging to the family, you know.
But that's one of the consequences of a well-to-do family that didn't go through the motions of doing a trust and setting that up properly, that things do go into probate, right?
Yeah, that's... Probate is there for us for, A, if there was no will, mm-hmm. B, if there was a will, you know, which has to go through probate. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When you create a trust, you get to skip the probate process, mm-hmm. unless there's something wrong with the trust. For right. example, one of those instances that I was describing. And so then the probate court is there for contestants to, mm-hmm. to fight about it. Mm-hmm. You get a judge, you don't get a jury. But you get, you know, the judge to act as the trier of fact and make the decisions and award remedies as he or she sees fit.
What is the latest on Prince's estate?
Prince remains one of my, you know, personal heroes and icons, you know. So I was just horrified to find out last year, in April, that he died suddenly and to me tragically. And despite the fact that he was known to be a meticulous businessman, owning and maintaining his own catalog of music, being a pioneer in that regard, you know, against Warner Brothers and managing his own labels, you know, producing it all, composing it all, performing it all, and being an ardent keeper of his intellectual property, mm-hmm. he left nothing organized for his estate.
Isn't that bizarre?
It's so bizarre. It is so bizarre.
What do you think is the psychology of that? Is that just something he didn't want to deal with?
If we're going to like find some poem written by him that someone says,
right,
hey,
exactly.
Actually, this counts as a will.
Yeah, exactly.
My
guess is, I mean, it was interesting because what you had said was maybe he thought he was like immortal and it was like, oh, I don't have to deal with that. Like, I just wonder if it was a denial.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Could
possibly.
Be. I mean, that's certainly one possible explanation.
Or maybe he was just a rock star.
Exactly. But, you know, didn't think about it. Yeah.
And then the storm clouds gather further because he was unmarried. Mm-hmm. So, you know, normally the wife and the children would be, you know, the natural objects of his estate. But he was unmarried, had no children. Mm-hmm. And so where do you go next? Well, you start looking for his parents. Parents both died. And then it goes down the parents' line to the parents' children. And his father had children from various ladies in his life. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to nephews and nieces of half.
So they're all figuring it out still, right?
Well, I think they've got it figured out. But of course, then everybody who, you know, wants to, everybody has a right and access to the court. You know, there was dozens and dozens of people who came out of the woodwork saying, I had his child, you know, and DNA tests that follow and all kind, you know. Mm. And so I think they've kind of got it now down to the group of people who are going to inherit, which is family and remote family members.
Is it a sizable amount, the whole estate?
Yeah, I think it's in the range of, you know, just shy of $500 million.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
You know, so...
Small petty change.
Yeah, exactly right.
Petty cash.
No big deal.
Yeah.
And then there's, you know, I mean, Elvis's estate is still earning royalties, and mm-hmm. and the museum that he, that was his house, mm-hmm. Graceland is what mm-hmm. I was trying to think of, is still, you know...
Producing income.
Yeah, produces income and lots of fanfare still. And so
the heirs continue to reap the rewards of that?
Yeah, and it you know, mm-hmm. kind of means there's going to have to be administrators of his estate for the almost perpetually.
Wow.
So amazing.
Contrary to Michael Jackson, who apparently had a mess of a financial picture.
He had a mess of a financial picture, but he happened to own the Beatles catalog. Uh-huh. And so... He owned the rights to that, and his father, whom people have various levels of, you know, like or dislike for, and his mother got in there and were fighting about who should be in charge. He didn't leave either of them in charge per his mm-hmm. documents. Mm-hmm. And his estate continues to be administered and subject of controversy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So who did he leave it to?
To his children. He has,
yeah,
he
okay,
has,
he left
kids.
The three kids. Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Three, two, or three, I forget. But,
three,
yeah. Yeah, one who happens to be named Prince.
Right, exactly. Prince, Paris, and Blanket.
Right, that's
yeah.
right.
Yeah. We did have Michael Jackson's
nephews on the show.
Show.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah, three team.
Foundation.
This is so weird because I don't know why, but I had a dream last night that I met Michael Jackson. That is so weird. I don't know why. Just came back to me.
He had a message mm-hmm. for us to give to the.
Oh my God, that is
nephews.
So weird. Oh my gosh.
It's all part of something.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you favor a parent or parents putting their children in charge of the trust or an outsider, a third party? Let's say the parents recognize that the siblings have conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Would you then say that it would be wiser to name a third party? Like, you know, I could name Kelly.
Right.
Or you can name anybody you want to take mm-hmm. charge of.
Yeah, it should be the individual or sometimes institution that you trust most. So here's your options is you know, a family member or a friend. Or, you know, you can go with a bank-like institution, mm. you know, a bank and trust company.
Or your accountant.
Your accountant may or may not be interested. You know, a lot of us mm-hmm. professionals would be, you know, sort of natural in terms of, you know, the acumen and the ability. But we have to go and tell our insurance people that we're administering trusts and then our premiums go up. So I don't tend to do it. You know,
right.
Sometimes I'll be left in their documents as having the power to appoint somebody. And
that's good.
Yeah, that can be part of the process. Mm-hmm. You know, on that topic of and then the other, there's a group out there of certified professional fiduciaries, and so they go through a program and get certified, and they've got experience, and mm-hmm. and they're probably compared to a bank or an institution a lot more affordable for the estate.
Mm-hmm.
And they tend to be hands-on and very able to do it, so that they should be considered as well.
Oh, that's, yeah, I've heard about those.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Oh, my goodness. So what are some other topics we haven't yet covered yet that you really want to share with our audience?
Well, you know, first of all, it's important to get to it. Kelly was telling me that she got hers done, and, mm-hmm. and I applauded her because she probably represents, you know, Kelly's young. And she's, you got a...
I knew I liked you.
Seven-year-old, right? A seven-year-old.
And a four-year-old.
And a four-year-old. And so, you know, we'll do the math, you know, in terms of what her age might be, but, you know, the chances of, in my experience, what I observed, that mm-hmm. people have put anything together at her age are mm-hmm. very slight, even for people who have lots of property.
Mm-hmm.
So it's your financial planner usually tells you to get around to it. You know, maybe your therapist
yeah.
even tells you it's a good idea. But people, I find it interesting, and I, this is based on an article I read one time, is people don't have buy-in to the fact that they're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
So they say that's why, for example, you imagine yourself sitting at your own funeral
mm-hmm.
and, you know, mm-hmm. kind of going yes. through the grief. You can't get your head around it. So, you know, I would say to the children out there who are in their 40s and 50s and 60s, talk to your parents and make sure that they've got something together and prompt them to put their affairs in order for you.
Mm-hmm. As well as themselves.
Right? As well as I mean, yourself.
Really, you know, once sure. you have children or property, I think yes. that's the first moment to start doing that.
Right. There's a few sort of, benchmarks in life that kind of should give you a little bit of a nudge is, well, A, you have kids.
Yeah.
So, you know, how you have kids, you can put together at least a guardianship appointment in case something happens to you. Because otherwise, who knows who they'll end up with. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe you don't get along with some of the people in your family that might take custody of them. And then later in life, usually, or maybe about the same time, you buy your house. Great opportunity to say, okay, now I'm going to create a trust, because title to real estate is the big one. You know, mm-hmm. how do you deal with that? And so, and of course, maybe every birthday that ends in a zero, you start to rethink it.
That's a good milestone.
And revise it, right?
Yeah.
Every 5 years, revisit what you've already created.
That's a good rule of thumb. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good idea to just get to it, have something as, you know, relative to its benefit to your loved ones,
mm-hmm.
It's not very costly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people get mad because sometimes it costs a few thousand dollars, but just to give you an idea, if you didn't do anything, oftentimes, depending on how complicated it is, to administer your estate through probate could cost up to 10% of the gross value of your estate.
Wow.
Oh,
where
wow,
it would just, you know, if you have a trust that you spend a few thousand on, you know, when you're well and able to do it, it would cost maybe a couple or a few thousand dollars to, you're leaving people with the power of the pen. So in an office setting like the one we're sitting in right now, and with a notary handy, you just handle all the necessary transfers of property and be done with it, you know, in an ideal setting. Mm-hmm. So
what if, I have a really interesting question, what if somebody just draws up their own will, doesn't get it notarized, and then they die? Does it have to be like notarized for it to actually count?
No, and people, and you know, the courts are going to want to honor
uh-huh.
the testamentary intentions of the deceased.
Okay.
And so they'll do everything they can. You know, they'll do a few acrobatics to deal with people who do that. And a lot of times that's what's called a holographic will, is when it's in your own handwriting and it's signed. And so I think you ought to date it, but some people forget to even date it.
You know,
it can be the more the subject of controversy than not,
mm-hmm.
but it can move things forward.
Mm.
You know, but again, that would have to go through the probate process.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause somebody has to, you know, the probate court is there because how do you transfer title to real estate? Well, somebody's got to sign a deed, but the person who could sign the deed is dead. So the court has to appoint somebody with the authority to do that. But if you create a trust, you know, you got a mechanism in place that circumvents all of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This has been so useful, you know? Like, I mean, really, wow. They should do, like, a course on this, a college or something. I mean, even though they're young then, but when else are people going to learn this? Then it's too late.
Well, maybe real estate agents should hand people pamphlets when somebody's buying a house.
Exactly.
And OBGYNs should hand people a pamphlet.
Oh, yeah, that's all true. Right. That's a good one.
Yeah.
So it puts it out there a little bit.
Exactly.
Next steps.
Yeah, it's true.
I always wonder what sort of chatter and banter goes on during OBGYN appointments, you know.
Yeah.
Have you created a trust?
You're right.
I went to a party once that was loaded with OBGYNs. And, you know, when you want to be a fly on the wall, you get to hear. These are some of the raunchiest,
oh, really?
Most insensitive
oh
people.
God,
the
so
way
funny.
They talk about the vagina. And, I mean, it was a little bit horrifying.
That is scary.
It was scary. And they just thought they were funnier than shit.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable.
Oh unbelievable. God. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so we are talking with Christian Arrieta. You've been such a great guest, and you can find him at VenturaCountyLawyer.com. Mm-hmm. Just spelled right out, one long word, VenturaCountyLawyer.com. And I take it you are taking on new clients.
Sure.
And
sure
we often offer our guests, if you were to receive a call from somebody through listening to this show, if you gave them a code word, that maybe you'd give them 10% off the first
sure,
consultation
I'll give
them or something.
A discount, thanks to you. You know, they got to mention your names.
Okay.
Okay. Yes.
Our
something
show
like
name.
That or your show name.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
The Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show. Mention our name.
To.
And Christian Arrieta would be happy to extend a discount for a consultation.
All right. Well, great.
Yeah. Is there something that we missed? What's maybe...
Well, I mean, parting words. On how much time you have.
Oh, we have about a minute and a half.
Yeah.
Oh, parting words is just, you know, remember what we're talking about is a trust, really. And mm-hmm. so it's a trust. It entails appointing somebody who you trust to handle it. Because oftentimes, you know, there is no trust police that go around making sure that everything's getting honored. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's important to select the right person to be in charge.
And boy, could I imagine in a family if a sibling perceives that the person who's been in charge was really the con job manipulative one mm-hmm. that manipulated the parents and just knows mm-hmm. that it's going to be deceptive, how painful that
yes.
would be.
Mm-hmm. Yes, 100%. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm proud of you that you've taken that step and you've done
thank
that.
You. It's yes. really my husband. I should give him the credit, but you
I
know.
Did do mine. I started my process probably about 15 years ago.
Yeah, I knew you did. I yeah. feel like you come out of the womb and you're like, you know,
I'm
doing
already
it. Yes,
adding up,
exactly.
Doing this.
Yes. Thank you so much, Christian. You were such a great
my pleasure.
Guest and a
great
really
guest.
And you explained it in really beautiful terms too.
Very
thank
simply
you.
Too. Yes. Yeah. VenturaCountyLawyer.com, Christian Arrieta. And next week, I know you're just like dying.
I'm
and
so, excited.
So excited.
So we have like the most famous numerologist in the world, basically. His name is Josh Siegel. And he didn't really believe in this. He comes from a background where, you know, very intellectual, was like, thought it was kind of voodoo. And then once he realized there was a very calculated process to it, he got really into it. So it'll be really cool to,
yes.
to hear about that.
Okay.
And you can visit us on our website, docandtherapist.com, or on Twitter at doctherapist1. And you can always send us emails, docandtherapist@gmail.com. And that's it. Thank you so
Have
much.
Have a good week.
Goodbye.
Love you.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.